This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
Good evening, it's Lucy Neuberger here. Apologies for the late start, but this evening we are going to be talking about marking and feedback.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Once again, I apologise for starting late this evening. A few technical difficulties, but nothing that we can't overcome here on Teachers Talk Radio. So this evening, we are going to be talking about marking and feedback. this definitely received a mixed reaction when I tweeted it out into the Twitter sphere last week. So we will be talking about, well, all the different experiences that we've had as teachers, as well as what's currently working, what's not working, and maybe what the future holds in terms of, well, in terms of feedback and marking. But, as always, before we get started, I certainly need to, I think, come down from a bit of a manic day this morning. So, as always, we're going to start with the weekly recap, or rather, I don't really even need to talk about my week, because today has been a week in of itself. I have not stopped since about 7:45 this morning, and to be perfectly honest with you, I'm actually quite relieved to be sitting here having a chat with you all now. It's almost quite cathartic, quite calming, to be sitting and just talking out to you all. So this morning, I finally hosted my coffee morning for the parents of my class. This is something that my school does. Tom's just saying there's glad it's cathartic. Yes, Tom, it definitely is. I hosted my coffee morning for my year group this morning. And this is something that my school does. And now we can start inviting parents back into school slowly but surely. These have become a thing again. Now, unfortunately, I'm on my own at the moment. I don't actually have a partner teacher. She was sadly taken ill at the start of term. She's fine. She's fine, but she's not going to be teaching this year, which has meant that kind of the year five responsibilities have all fallen on me. So I trotted downstairs to host this morning. And in my infinite wisdom, I thought, you know what, this is going to be a quick job, quick 15 minutes. I'll tell them all about the exciting things the children are going to be learning. We'll have a quick chat about homework, and I'll be back upstairs enjoying the rest of my PPA time in no time at all. Of course, that's never how these things go, is it? I mean, you have all the best intentions, and quite honestly, just as I was about to turn on my heel and exit the hall, it was like being mobbed. Honestly, it was I had a queue of parents in front of me. And I often say to children in class, you know, I'm not a bus stop, go and sit down. And I had to stop myself saying it to these parents, because of course you can't do that. You want to chat to them and to get to know them, because it's all been very arm's length. Certainly over the last year that I've been in this particular school, but also generally for all of us, it's been a sort of arm's length thing with parents. They've kind of almost been, for better or worse, they've been in the distance a bit. So now to be confronted with them again is quite overwhelming. And some of the questions this morning were extraordinary. one parent asked me, which subject do you think is the children's least favourite? And I thought, I couldn't possibly comment, sir, to be honest, because it varies from child to child. And even within certain subjects, there might be topic areas that they like and others that they don't so much. I know that for the primary maths teachers amongst us, I know that fractions, and I said this to him, is one of those things that just every year it comes up. And every year group I've taught it in, I don't know about you, but it's just hell on wheels, to be perfectly honest. Obviously, because it relies a lot on previous knowledge, times tables, division, etc. And when children don't necessarily have that or struggle with that, it can be a bit of a disaster area. So eventually managed to escape the parents, managed to run back upstairs, straight into teaching again. And of course, in true teacher fashion, not even time for a cup of coffee or to go to the loo or anything like that. Nope, onwards. Then forgot I had lunch duty today, so swiftly had to run down, or totter rather, because I was wearing silly boots today. So totter down the tennis courts to ensure that I was there for year three and four. So managed that. Then I did have about an hour's grace period this afternoon. Then I hosted my club after school. So I've started an origami club at school this year, which is very exciting. And I love doing it. It's one of my secrets, guilty pleasures. It's another one of those things that I find quite therapeutic, and children seem to absolutely love it. I actually incorporated it into last year's class's golden time. So a few used to sit with me and do bits and pieces, and that was great, great fun. So now I've turned it into a club, and we actually are very fortunate in that we get paid to run our after school clubs at school. So it's a nice little earner if you have a few children in there. And maybe I don't think that would ever fly in the UK, to be honest. But you can let me know what you think about that. But yeah. And then finally, of course, I am currently sitting on my sofa talking to you. So the day hasn't ended yet, but I'm glad that Teachers Talk Radio is my last hurrah of today, if you like, and then I can go off and have some dinner and probably go straight to bed, like the rock star that I am. Outside of school, I mean, the surfing debacle continues. It's actually been very stormy in Portugal this week, so headed totter down to the beach again. And because of the weather front coming in, of course, this brings in fantastic waves, and it's really, really great if you are a reasonably proficient surfer, of course, which I still am not. But I had a good session on Sunday afternoon, and it's still not great, but I'm not giving up. I'm still sticking with it, still going strong. Didn't drown. Got shouted at a lot by the instructors about my feet position and all the rest of it. I also got told that I need to work on my flexibility. So that was a shock to the system. So so it's going to be more yoga for me, rather than, apparently, yoga in terms of surfing is better for me than going running. I mean, go figure. Yes, so very stormy this week, and actually the children in class have been shattered because we had a fantastic storm on, I think it was Sunday night. Yeah, lightning storm, the works, which was beautiful to watch. But of course it was at 5 o'clock in the morning when we'd all rather be asleep. So I had children just flopped on desks because they hadn't slept a wink on Monday morning, which wasn't particularly great. Also, I mean, Portugal, in terms of being equipped for extreme weather, I mean, we complain about the UK when it snows. Portugal is much the same when it rains or when it storms, electricity goes out, flooding, you name it. So we also had, funnily enough, not the tallest part of the school not the tallest part of school getting struck by lightning, but actually one of the smaller buildings, which then meant that year three and four had no internet for the majority of Monday. So that was all a bit of a disaster as well. But, you know, we power through and we carry on, and we did get it all up and working again, which was great. So that's been a very sort of whistle-stop tour through, well, really only the last few days. I mean, it's never dull, as they say. On to other things. Ooh, the shows I've been listening to this week. I actually had a great night listening to Emily last night. I think it was the Late Show. I believe it was the Late Show. And she was talking about pastoral care in secondary schools and what being ahead of year means and how that and what the role is and what that entails and how that kind of fits in to a wider teaching role as well. Now, as an Upper Key Stage 2 primary teacher, I found that really interesting because, I mean, I teach in year 5, but I'm very aware of the year 6 to 7 transition. And of course, that's been affected recently by COVID. And it was interesting for me to hear about pastoral care from a sort of early secondary perspective, because that's not something I'm really privy to in my teaching life. And so it's always great to learn kind of what goes on in secondary schools and that it is being well looked after, because I think we as primary teachers often feel that we are the nurturing side and we're the ones that really kind of take care of children and really look after them well, and that we almost feel, I mean, I don't know about you, but I used to feel that once they go off to secondary, it's kind of, oh, well, they've got to fend for themselves now. They've flown the sort of nice fluffy nest of primary and that's it. And of course, that is not the case. But and certainly listening to Emily's show, I found very, very reassuring. So please do listen back to that. That's well worth a listen. I also really enjoyed Kate Jones's show, and I've actually crossed out because in my notes because I put the wrong day originally. I believe it was the Friday breakfast show. Again, I will double check this. And she spoke to, and I think in her show notes, she's called him an edu-legend or something to that effect, Dylan William. Now, I can't even begin to summarise that show. You're just going to have to take my word for it and go and listen to it. There was so much insight and so much advice. So whether you are an ECT this year or however far you are into your career, go and have a listen, because to hear Dylan William talk about, well, just impart wisdom, if you like, was really quite fantastic. So go forth and listen. But of course, not right now, because you are listening to me. Now, as well as all of this going on and the listening to shows and everything crazy going on in the world at the moment, I'm still plugging away with my little old What's for Dinner feature. So please, 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 those of you that are in the studio, do let me know what you are having for dinner. As always, my dear best friend, Eleni, has checked in to tell me what she is having. And hold on, I'm just going to find the text that she sent me. Okay, well, Eleni, that's not great. She's having popcorn for dinner, apparently, because she says she feels she's eaten too much recently. So that was uninspiring. Sorry, Eleni. Thank you for that, though. For me, I think it's going to be a tofu and broccoli night for tonight. Lawrence has chipped in and he's having shepherd's pie. Thank you for letting me know. Also, Lawrence, homemade, or is it a pop in the microwave or the oven job? I wouldn't blame you if it was one of those, because after the day I've had, the thought of having to cook after this is a bit, oh gosh, okay. So we'll see how we go. Oh, he's having a microwave job. I don't judge you, and I'm fairly sure that no one else listening will judge you either. Now, after all that, I think it's important to probably get into what we're talking about this evening. Now, marking and feedback produces an emotional reaction from teachers, I would say. And it's been an open discussion over, well, the last few years, certainly in the last few years that I've been teaching. And I know that there's been reports from the Education Endowment Foundation. There's been huge amounts of research. And there are some very prominent characters who have contributed to this, who we will talk about in detail today. So we've got people like Claire Seeley and Joe Kirby, who I'll talk about in a little bit more detail in a moment if you're not familiar with those names. But as a jumping off point, I think it's important that we explore what is meant by marking and feedback, because we as teachers, we often use them interchangeably. And although they kind of are under the same umbrella, they actually mean different things. Okay. And again, please do contribute what you feel you understand by marking as opposed to feedback, because I'd be interested to know your thoughts on this. But from my research and from the reading that I've done this week, the way I've kind of split it in my mind, if you like, and again, please jump in and agree, disagree, it's entirely up to you. But I've put marking down as sort of pointing out errors and omissions that children have made in that work, in their work, whether it is maths, English, topic, whatever it is. So the marking to me, those marks on paper, I'm kind of pointing out where I feel they've missed something. Whereas the feedback side of it for me is actually helping them progress, actually helping them move on. And that is the distinction. I mean, I don't know how any of you feel about that, so please feel free to comment. And just looking at, and I've actually got this in front of me, I'm going to try and not rustle paper too much, but the executive summary from the Education Endowment Foundation, and they say that marking plays a central role in our work, and it's obviously a frequent focus of what we talk about. But in recent times, it's been seen as unnecessarily burdensome, read properly. And it's recommending that all marking should be driven by professional judgment. Now, there's a statement. Professional judgment. And it should be meaningful, manageable, and motivating. And you'll hear this mentioned by one of my guests today when I play you his interview shortly. Adam Woodward, who you'll hear from shortly. When he redesigned his marking policy for his school, he was very much underpinned by those three words. And obviously we all use as teachers a wide range of marking approaches. I mean, I've been in schools where it's been a rainbow of pen colours, as I'm sure it has been for you. And I've also been in schools, or in a school, where there was in inverted commas, no marking policy, which I found very odd, because I think that, and again, this will come up as we chat this evening, but there is somewhere a happy medium that exists between the two. And when I was in a no marking school, I was just teaching maths. So we had a system where from years four and above, we had three teachers per year group. One taught maths, one taught reading, one taught writing. And the idea behind the no marking policy was to look at five books a day across three sets. So you'd look at 15 books a day, that was it. And from those 15 books, or from those five books per set, you would decide what the children had understood, what they hadn't understood, and you'd go from there. Now, because you were only teaching one subject effectively, it worked quite well. It was all right. I sort of felt that I was kind of missing out on giving some children the feedback that maybe they needed, but at the same time, from a workload point of view, which I think is where this whole marking thing falls apart for a lot of us, it was great because it took me, you know, a matter of minutes. But I did often walk away from it and think, am I doing this justice? Have I maybe on one particular day missed a child who really hasn't understood something, or really not quite got it? And am I not giving him the feedback and the progression that they need? And, you know, another great person who talks about marking in kind of terms of different metaphors is somebody called Joe Kirby. Now, Joe Kirby talks about marking as a hornet and feedback as a butterfly. And he talks about marking taking so much time and so much energy. And instead of, you know, putting our energy into that, actually we need to put our energy into feedback as a butterfly, as sort of in a timely way, being able to send children forward rather than giving them detailed written feedback that actually has no bearing on what they are doing. And I will try and remember today, because I've got so much information in front of me today that I'm not going to be able to go into detail on all of it. So I will try today in my Twitter sort of show notes after this to put the links to all these things that I'm referring to. So the report from the Education Endowment Foundation, Joe Kirby talking about marking versus feedback and marking as a hornet and feedback as a butterfly, which is a great metaphor. And I will also post a link to Claire Seeley's work. And she's talked a lot about how she's made no marking work for the schools she's worked in, but no marking doesn't mean sort of no marks on paper. It means sort of, again, devising a system where children are getting the feedback and the support they need without being a burden on teachers. So what I'm going to do in a moment is I'm going to take a short break, and then I'm going to play you an interview that I did with the lovely Adam Woodward yesterday. He very kindly chatted to me about the reinventing the marking policy in his school and how he went about that and what went into that. So I'm looking forward to that, and hopefully everything will work beautifully. So let's make sure.
Creative Resources, made for teachers by teachers. At Creative Resources, we've been rethinking what a classroom can be. We've created a huge range of more than 2,500 original and exciting resources that span across more than 15 different subject areas. Whether you're looking for primary or secondary level resources, careers options, PSHE, arts or humanities, Creative Resources have the resources for you. We offer full curriculum packages and unique challenging escape rooms themed on topics such as Shakespeare, Tudors and fractions. We have quizzes, task cards, Tarsia puzzles and lots more. Better still, more than 100 resources can be accessed for free. Just visit our website www.creative.com. You can get 10% off any order you make on our website by using the discount code TTRadio. Creative Resources, made for teachers by teachers. Every teacher loves stationery, right? Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers, delivered through your door every month. You need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited when the box arrives. It's such a treat.
My Teachers Love Stationery Club box is just a little treat to myself every month.
It's always full of delightful and surprising items, including some really good quality stationery brands like Faber-Castell and Stabilo.
And because you never know what you're going to get, it makes it even more fun and special when you get it.
It feels really great to be supporting a family business that's run by real teachers. I can't help feeling like they just know what I'm going to enjoy using stationery-wise better than I do myself.
Visit teacherslovestationery.club and enter the code TTRadio when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. Teacherslovestationery.club.
Welcome back. So you are with me, Lucy Neuberger, on The Twilight Show. Now, I'm very pleased to play this next interview for you. This was recorded yesterday, but while you're listening to it, do please feel free to jump in and to comment. And afterwards, with my other guest, who I'm hoping is in the studio already, Freya, we're going to discuss, well, what Adam says about marking and feedback, as well as our other thoughts and anything else you really want to say on it. So fingers crossed this works for me. Let's hope it does.
This is Teachers Talk Radio.
So I am here here with Adam Woodward, and we are talking about marking and feedback. So Adam, before we get into it, can you please introduce yourself and your current role in education for me, please?
Yep, thank you, Lucy. My name is Adam Woodward. I am the Director of Studies at a school in Kent, where my focus is on developing curriculum, and part of that was developing and adapting our own feedback or marking policy, as it was, to really support outcomes of children and developing our teachers to be more time efficient.
Oh, brilliant. And just in terms of marking and feedback, as a teacher, what's your experience been? Have you worked in schools where there have been brilliant things that you've seen, or have there been situations where you thought, oh my goodness, this is absolutely horrendous and I don't know how this works and what benefit this has to children or to anybody else for that matter?
Yeah, in my previous school, I spent a lot of time focused on the marking of my books. They were always pristine and had two colours. It was green, which was what was done really well, and purple, so even better if, and those next steps and modelling, and they always look great. And my head teacher would often use my books as an example. Ah, look how well presented they are, and great, and use them as a benchmark. But that was kind of at the detriment of me. And it's only now, looking back those years ago, that actually I wrote a lot. I spent a lot of my weekends making sure that extended pieces of writing were marked thoroughly, giving children opportunity to feedback. But then if the children aren't given enough time to feedback, I always tried to make sure I did, but if they're not given that time to feedback, then and what they're writing, if they're not understanding what you're writing either, you could be writing reams at length, and then they're just kind of glossing over it, not really taking too much in, not really editing and adapting too much, then really all that time spent is spent negatively. And it's only now that I've realised over the last 2-3 years that actually my time could have been better spent planning really engaging lessons, producing resources that could really benefit the children and their outcomes more than spending it on writing reams and reams that actually was largely probably ignored and not really acted upon and didn't actually benefit the outcomes of children and where their progression was. So it's been, it was a steep learning curve, but something that I'm really grateful for.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it sounds like from what you're saying that your energy went into, instead of going into the lessons, I mean, of course, I imagine it did. I mean, even in early careers teachers, the energy goes into everything.
Yeah.
But it sounds like the majority of your energy was going into that marking and actually, you know, the feedback and trying to get children to look at what you had written and the hours and hours of time that you'd got to put into that.
Yeah, I think the
classroom energy.
I think at the time, my thought was, if I'm giving this to children, I'm doing them a great service because I'm showing that I've acknowledged what they've written and I've read it thoroughly and really acted upon it. Great, but actually, I don't think I needed to do that so much. So it was with the best interest of the children at heart, but actually in practice, whether that was actually manifesting itself as being the best interest was something that I think, as I said, in recent years, I've learned to realise that maybe that's not necessarily the case.
Gosh, wonderful. And in terms of, you know, going forward and, you know, in recent times, obviously, we've all been working online. We've all been, you know, Google Classroom, Class Dojo, various things. And we've had to adapt lessons to online calls and to things like that. And, of course, with that, I don't know about you, but our marking policy had to change. And I tried it all. I tried leaving voice notes. I tried leaving typed comments. And it didn't seem to matter what I did in that respect. The parents didn't seem to feel that I was kind of doing enough. And I wondered kind of what your experience was online in terms of teaching and marking.
I can understand that, because I think when it came to lockdown, we were under so much scrutiny. It was like we were being observed by 30 members of Ofsted every lesson, and everything was scrutinised within the nth degree. And we all know that parent, and they've got their best interests of their children at heart, but nothing's ever quite good enough for their darling child. I have to say, our experience was really positive. We're very fortunate at school in the resources that we've got, and our children were very savvy with using Teams and OneNote, etc. Office 365 prior to lockdown. So we kind of, we were very proactive in the fact that this could happen. And so if it does, we want our children to be ready. And so children were taught how to use OneNote and Teams, and so were our teachers as well, because it was new to a lot of them. And so when it actually came about, we're like, right, we're ready, we can do this. But yes, in terms of marketing and feedback, that had to change. And we could have write at length comments. We had the use of Teams, so a lot of our feedback was given verbally, which kind of then brought around this change that I'm sure I'll talk about in a second. But a lot of verbal feedback, acknowledgement of work. And I think what parents saw was actually we were acknowledging it. We're acknowledging the progress that children are making and the children's achievements and where we wanted them to continually progress and edit and improve and so forth. And so they could see that verbally. It didn't necessarily have to be always written, but there was acknowledgement of the work that children had done, but just not in the depth that maybe had been seen previously, as we would do in school and writing those extensive next steps and so forth. Because, again, I'll talk about this in a second, I'm sure, but who are we giving feedback for? Is it for the parents to see parents' evening or at the end of the year if the children take their books home? Is it for SLT to do book scrutinies? Or actually, is it for the children? And I think, obviously, it's the latter, to help them progress. Like, in terms of context, a parent seeing a child's book and the work they've done in September, October, when they bring it home at the end of the year, they don't know the context of that day or what's happened or what's been written. And so I think it's very difficult for them to make a judgment. But I feel as teachers, in my experience, they really want to, teachers always want to please, and they want to do the best for the children. And the people who also really care about that child's progress are obviously their parents. And so it's making sure that parents realise that we've got a policy in place for a specific reason, and that it has, that they can still see progress across the school year without writing extensively. And actually, that feedback can come in lots of different forms.
And you've alluded to this already, but part of the reason we're having this conversation in the first place is because you said to me on Twitter that actually, you know, your school's adapted its feedback policy, and did an influence of that come from online, from the online teacher?
Yes, it did, massively. I think parents could see, teachers could see, children could see that actually progress was still being made without writing extensively. I mean, I've also been heavily influenced by the reading I've done and examples of other feedback policies across the country, and some really revered. I mean, the EEF marking review from 2016 that came about and spoke about actually how we should be looking at supporting children and how that time can be best spent. No written marking as well has been really helpful in terms of gauging that. And so, yeah, it all came about all kind of at once, really, around lockdown and working remotely. But also, I'd had thoughts prior to that about how I could do that. But I wasn't in a position where I could really put that change into place until really partway through lockdown, and I'm in the current role that I am now.
And so, in sort of broad strokes, if you like, what does your school's feedback policy look like now? Where does marking feed into that? Because I know we talk about, and I said this to you when we spoke previously, that we talk about marking and feedback interchangeably as teachers, but actually, although they're kind of part of the same thing, they are different concepts, as it were.
I mean, I spoke to my head teacher about adapting our policy. She was like, yep, yeah, great. So I formed a working party. She encouraged me to form a working party. So it wasn't just me doing it. I had voices from across the school and invited people to join, and I had some some great representatives from across our school to really help put this together. The first thing I spoke about in our first kind of get together was actually what is the difference between feedback and marking. Because our policy was a marking policy, and straight away I wanted to change that, because written marking is just one form of feedback. And so I wanted to kind of to put that across first, and to really frame the conversation around actually what is marking, what is feedback. Really, what we spoke about was we looked at examples like Claire Seeley has written some great blogs about marking. We spoke briefly about a no marking policy, or a no written marking policy, but my head teacher's like, no, we want to see some form of acknowledgement of marking books, and I've totally got that, which was fine. And so we didn't go down a complete no marking policy route, but a lot of our policy talks about verbal feedback and how that might look, and actually live feedback as well. So actually we are being more proactive in our time during the lessons and addressing misconceptions when they can, when they come up. And then the written element afterwards should be quite quick, and just acknowledging whether children have met learning objectives, and looking at our marking codes, should we not have had an opportunity to do so in as much detail during the lesson itself. Maths was really straightforward, I think, and I think anyone thinking about feedback will know there is a very big difference between the feedback and marking in maths and the feedback and marking in English.
Absolutely.
And hopefully those people listening now are really nodding their heads and saying, you've got your extended writing, you've got your big writes, whatever you want to call them. And that's where we had big conversations about what we wanted to look like. Maths, we knew what we wanted to see. It was quite easy. So a lot of it came from online learning, and what we were doing, actually it was working really well. Writing was a bit trickier, and there was a lot of back and forth about what we wanted it to look like, and it was trying to put everything in place. The main thing I said that I wanted our policy to have was, and Claire Seeley spoke about the three M's, about being motivating, manageable, and meaningful. I'm in one particular order, I can't remember the order now. But making sure that the time that we are spending on marking is having an impact on the children, but also not to the detriment of our well-being, and not to the detriment of producing lessons and creating great lessons that are going to really produce fantastic outcomes. So just being a bit more time efficient. So how can we do that? And again, making sure we've got those verbal feedback, peer and self-assessment we spoke about in a lot of detail, thinking about the structure of our lessons. We really went deep into actually what do we want our writing to look like, what is the process that we want teachers and children to go through. And we spoke about whole class feedback, and some teachers were really for it, and some teachers weren't so sure, for various reasons. And it was a case of we came up with different ideals of how that would look. So if we did do some editing afterwards, then we wouldn't need to mark the whole piece prior. We would look at a certain section and then mark that afterwards. If we weren't doing the editing after it was the final published piece, then we would look at the piece as a whole. And it was really tricky, and it sounds really complicated saying it out loud. I think it's one of those things where actually if you see the policy, it might, hopefully, fingers crossed, it'll make a bit more sense. But ultimately, yeah, writing was very difficult to come to a solution where it's going to really benefit the children. Actually, they're able to see the acknowledgement in their writing, especially when you come to year six and you've got children writing a lot and in a lot of detail, with some great understanding of the English language, compared to Key Stage 1, where you're really honing on those basics and embedding the basics there. So it was trying to find a balance as well between key stages that showed progression across. So I'd like to think we've got there. We, as a working party, have said we're going to review this come Easter, and we're going to listen to teacher voice, right? Has this worked? What's worked? What hasn't? And adapt going forward. We don't think that this is necessarily the final the final policy set in stone, we know that actually until we put it out there and ask teachers to actually put these into practice, what this might look like. So, yeah, still a lot of work to be done, but hopefully the conversations we've had will really be beneficial to the children and teachers going forward.
Oh, that's brilliant. And I think, again, it's one of those things. It's very easy to sit in a room and talk about and try and kind of commit things to paper. But until teachers have lived it and worked with it, you haven't really got a lot to go on. And it's lovely to hear that actually there is a fluidity to that and that it's a conversation and discussion. Because I think in a lot of schools, certainly schools that I've worked in, we've approached it with senior members of staff in the past, and it's just not been a conversation because for whatever reason it's not at the forefront of the agenda, or they're happy with the way it is. So it's really nice to have a story where it's a very open thing.
Yes, and I'm very thankful for my head for suggesting it and taking me down that route, because having such a good cross section of teachers across the school really gave me fresh eyes. I had my own ideas as to what I wanted to look like, and I tried very hard not to steer the conversation towards what I felt was best, because it's important that actually these teachers are living and breathing that policy every day and need to adhere to it. So if I put something out there, I need to get that buy-in, and what better way to get buy-in than getting a really good cross-section of the school to actually be those champions of what they've invested their time in. So, yeah, anyone who is thinking about adapting their policy, I really would recommend getting a good cross-section of teachers and really investing that time to discuss it together before trying to put it into place. And you've already got those champions of change there who can really influence the thinking of your other members of staff who may not have been part of that working group. So, yeah, really, I think a really beneficial process in the long term.
So I suppose at the moment you're awaiting to see impact. You're not kind of sure what. So this is very. So when did this come into place? Was this a kind of a?
So it's come into place this half term. So we finished it right at the end of term. So it was a year long process. Nearly. We had a lockdown in between halfway through, which made it trickier to put some things in place. But yeah, going backwards and forwards and finding time where we could meet as well. I mean, schools are busy places at the best of times. So finding a time where everyone was invested and everyone had the time to be able to commit made it tricky. So it was a long process, but one hopefully that will see benefits going forward. So yeah, it's come into place now. Teachers have already said, particularly about the maths, about how much time it's going to save them, and they're really positive about it. But we've taken, like, in terms of our rationale and the reasons for doing it, we've taken themes that have run through different policies and different research papers and reports that have been produced on feedback and marking. Like I said, the EEF marking review, Claire Seeley's work as well. And from other schools, I'm trying to think of, I'm just scoping through what I've got here. So there's Ashdown Primary School, which I had a look at as well, looking at whole class feedback, some Ursula's, like no marking. So we looked at loads of things. There's the blog post marking is a hornet. I can't remember for the life of me who that's by, and I do apologise.
Is it Joe Kirby?
Not giving the credit. It might, yes, Joe Kirby. So yes. So, yeah, taking all of those, thank you very much, Lucy.
Research for once.
Yeah, you have. Well done. Thank you. Gold star for you. Well done. Things like that were really beneficial in kind of shaping our thinking. And we kind of put the best bits of that. But it's also important that you think about the context of your school as well, just because you can't, it's not just a drag and drop and a copy and paste. It's a case of looking at the context of your children and your teachers, stakeholders, parents and so forth, and what's going to work for them. And so I think that's important. It's not just, oh, they've done it and it looks really good and they're really happy. You can't just change your name on it and think that's good enough. Because in practice, that might not necessarily work.
No, magpie has its place, but maybe not in terms of adapting policies. No, we need to be a bit more creative than that. But I suppose the last thing I want to ask you really is, where do you see marking and feedback kind of going forward more generally? Do you think that it's more kind of, we're going to move away increasingly from the written side of it, more into the verbal side, or do you think that this is something that is just going to constantly evolve over time, depending on who you are, where you're teaching,
etc.? Yeah, I mean, God, if I had the answer to that, I could...
It's a loaded question.
I could quit teaching and retire if I knew the answer to that one. It's true. I mean, technology has obviously been thrust into the forefront over the last 18 months. And if you've got the resources available, which is not the case in the majority of places, then teachers and pupils are able to thrive under that. And we found during lockdown that actually technology had a great place in adapting our policy. Now we're back in school and we're writing again in books and not online. It's a tricky one. I think, yeah, verbal, I mean, you're seeing so many more no written feedback policies emerging, and there's a lot of research to actually suggest that writing reams and reams doesn't actually add anything. And I think the no marking review says that as well, like the amount of time spent writing doesn't necessarily equate to progress and attainment. So it's a tricky one. So yeah, I can see more verbal feedback coming in place, but I think it's a case of just being smarter, like we say about work smarter, not harder. And I think it's knowing your children, knowing where they thrive, knowing how you can support them in the long term, knowing what their next step is, and knowing how to help them to progress. And I think that all comes back to planning and resourcing and creating really fabulous, well thought out lessons. And the best way of doing that without burning out is to not spend all your weekends responding to children's work in a written form. So I think the smarter you are marking and feeding back to children, however that looks, the more time actually you can spend creating these fabulous lessons with excellent resources that are going to really benefit the children, and therefore progress and attainment comes there. And that again, it goes around in a circle. So I think that's where we're going. It's just a case of, right, just be smart with it and know your children and how you can benefit them in the long term.
But somewhere out there, I mean, I'm sure that there is a balance of the written and the verbal that exists somewhere. Yeah. But as you say, if we figure it out, we can all retire, and that'd be great. But also, I think, yes, as well, you sort of mentioned channeling your energy as a teacher in inverted commas, the right way, which is to the energy going into that actual lesson rather than trying to kind of write reams and reams afterwards. But yeah, I think that's definitely some food for thought there. But I think all that remains for me to say, Adam, is thank you so much for your time and for giving me this interview. And I will hopefully speak to you soon on another subject matter.
Brilliant. Thank you, Lucy. I'd love to chat today. So thank you very much for your time as well.
So there you have it, a fantastic interview there from Adam Woodward. So much to discuss, or so much to talk about. I mean, some brilliant insights in terms of how important it is to speak to your teachers, certainly when you're adapting marking policies, to speak to the teachers involved, because they're going to be the ones using it, the ones living it. And I thought that was lovely, the fact that it had started as a kind of working party and evolved into something quite spectacular. So hopefully that ends up working really well. And I'd be interested to check in with Adam again in the future and see how that has panned out for him. So now what I'm going to do is, after the news, I'm going to bring on my next guest, who I forgot to mention. I'm so sorry, Freya. I know you are listening and you are there. I forgot to mention in the intro that she's joining me as well. But those beady-eyed amongst you on Twitter will have seen that she's on my guest list for this evening. So after the news, we're going to have a chat to Freya about her experiences with marking and feedback, which I think will maybe contrast with Adam's slightly. I'm not sure. We will see what she has to say for herself on the other side of the news.
This This is Teachers Talk Radio. And this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
This is your latest Teachers Talk Radio News with Gail Glenn. Ofsted have admitted that its inspectors were not highlighting off-rolling when it was identified in schools. Ofsted has told their inspectors that they must use the specific term off-rolling in their report if they find that it is taking place in a school. Ofsted defines off-rolling as the practice of removing a pupil from the school roll without a formal permanent exclusion, or by encouraging a parent to remove their child from the school roll, where the removal is primarily in the interest of the school rather than in the interest of the pupil. Off-rolling in these circumstances is a form of gaming. In an update to inspectors, it adds, some schools have issued press releases stating that off-rolling was not found because Ofsted did not use those words. Reports which have already been issued cannot be amended. Ofsted were reported in the Times Educational Supplement to have told inspectors that reports must always use the following set phrase to refer to off-rolling. This practice constitutes off-rolling, according to Ofsted's definition. The Guardian newspaper has reported that a survey of more than 20,000 working parents has found that 96% believe that not enough was being done to support parents with the cost of childcare. One third of parents said they spent less on their rent or mortgage than they did on childcare. 100,000 parents signed a petition asking for an independent review of childcare funding and affordability. This has triggered a debate on childcare in Parliament this week. The Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development has released data which puts the UK as the third highest childcare system in the world. A full-time place costs, on average, £12,376 a year. The Department for Education said parents' ability to claim 33 hours a week during term time for 3 and 4 year olds could save them up to £5,000 a year. This has been your daily education news briefing.
Paul, with your phonics teaching, did you know Oxford University Press now has 3 DfE validated programmes to help you? Read Write Ink Phonics, Floppy's Phonics, and the brand new Essential Letters and Sounds. Essential Letters and Sounds will get all your children reading well, quickly, using phonics books you may already have in your classroom. Developed by the Knowledge Schools Trust English Hub, it's affordable, easy to use, and makes teaching phonics with letters and sounds more effective. Whatever your school's phonics needs, Oxford has the solution. To find out more and receive support from your expert local educational consultant, visit oxfordprimary.com/phonics. Every teacher loves stationery, right? Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers delivered through your door every month. You need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited when the box arrives. It's such a treat.
My Teachers Love Stationery Club box is just a little treat to myself every month.
It's always full of delightful and surprising items, including some really good quality stationery brands like Faber-Castell and Stabilo.
And because you never know what you're going to get, it makes it even more fun and special when you get it.
It feels really great to be supporting a family business that's run by real teachers. I can't help feeling like they just know what I'm going to enjoy using stationery-wise better than I do myself.
Visit teacherslovestationery.club and enter the code TTRadio when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. Teacherslovestationery.club.
And you are back with me, Lucy Neuberger, on Tuesday's Twilight Show. My next guest this evening is the lovely Freya, and she is going to also share her insights and her thoughts on marking and feedback. She and I had a little bit of a chat earlier in the week on Twitter, so I know that she's going to have plenty to say, and she's in the studio, ready and waiting. So,
hello, can you hear me?
Good evening, Freya. Yes, I can.
Woohoo!
It's always result when this happens. It never fails to excite me when I can hear somebody loud and clear on the other end. Easily pleased.
You just never know, do you? Because sometimes the technology works, sometimes it doesn't, and it's always on the edge of your seat stuff.
It really and truly is. And honestly, as you probably heard in the intro, after a day like today, I was just thinking, please, just cooperate. Just work for me. That'd be great. But let's forget about all of that because we're here to talk about other things. But before we go any further, Freya, I always get guests to introduce themselves because they always do, a much better job than I do.
So, I'm Freya. I am a teacher of English, working internationally in Italy, in Rome, which is beautiful. I've had a really fantastic, varied career from being a teacher of English to a second in department, to in charge of literacy, to being head of English, to being director of teaching and learning. I've done the full remit, but I'm currently being incredibly lazy and just teaching, which is a sheer joy.
I mean, I don't think anyone would ever describe teaching as lazy, but I suppose if you're used to having your fingers in lots of pies, then maybe it's a welcome relief for you.
Absolutely. It's a joy to just be focused on the classroom and your wonderful pupils. It's brilliant.
And Freya, is that a clock I can hear in the background? A church clock something?
Yeah, the bells have just gone off. So we've just hit 8 o'clock here. The church bells are ringing. It's a very Italian thing, isn't it? It will stop in a moment, I promise.
Oh, no, not to worry. I suddenly thought, gosh, have I left a sound playing somewhere? I mean, entirely possible. I thought, no, it must be coming from Freya's end.
It's very atmospheric.
Oh, it's lovely. So in terms of, your experiences with marking and feedback, because I know that, it changed dramatically for me when I moved internationally, and it's certainly become a lot less I don't even know how to explain it, a lot less uptight, shall we say. And I don't know, in your experience, whether you kind of came from, the UK, where it was very sort of rigorous, or what's your journey been with marking and feedback?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's lots of overlap with what you've been saying and what your guests have said already. I think that for me, when I was, you guys tweeted out, didn't you, about marking and people's experience of marking. And the comments coming in seem to suggest really that we overcomplicate marking. And the first thing is that we need to not make it as onerous as we are making it. Now, I think fundamentally, as you're saying or suggesting there, it really boils down to a supportive SLT and a supportive middle leadership team as well. They've got to be behind a very pragmatic, realistic marking and feedback policy that does not bleed the life out of teachers. I think that's really, really important. And I think also we need to avoid these multiple approaches to marking and really simplify what we do so we are not changing highlighters, we're not using stamps, we're not using stickers, we're not using, our own codes. We've got one thing that we're really focused on and doing that really, really well.
I mean, I agree. And I definitely saw my previous guest Adam's reaction. Someone mentioned, I think it might have even been in the tweet that went out about the show, about verbal feedback stamps. And Adam's reaction was very much, no, don't like that. Don't like that at all. And I think that, some teachers love stamps and stickers and things like that. And I think maybe in some cases they do have their place. But I agree with you in the sense that in one particular school, and I think this is the problem that my school has currently, people need to be aligned. And I think at the moment, because we've just changed head teacher and we're still a little bit of a rudderless ship, that everyone's kind of doing their own thing rather than, and we haven't quite got as far as, and I look forward to when we do, of getting together and actually coming up with something that that really and truly works. So with that in mind, I mean, is there anything that you've developed or that you've been a part of? And I know that we sort of touched on this when we spoke on Twitter, that that really has worked for you and that you enjoy using and that you find to be really, really effective.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's really, really important, first of all, to sort of think about what we are marking and why we're marking it, and know that we don't need to mark everything ourselves. That isn't a necessity. And I think we can get really caught up in showing evidence of marking without really thinking about why we're doing the marking that we're doing or why we're offering the feedback that we're offering. I think kids fundamentally want two things. They want to see that their work has been looked at. So they want the acknowledgement. And, you know, I tweeted out recently that we've been back a week. I've already marked the 7, 8 and 10 books because I want to check that they are setting their standards really, really high and that they're fulfilling my expectations. So I think that initial marking is really, really important. But obviously the bulk of our marking has to be about improvement. Now, for me, fundamentally, I think the most important thing is that pupils are working harder than we are. Really, really important. And I think that the most successful strategy that I've ever come across was taken from Michaela, the school run by Catherine Berbersing, who is just a phenomenal inspirational woman. And that is this idea of green penning. For me, green penning is a technique that just saves you so much marking time. So every lesson, all of my pupils have to be equipped with a green pen. That's the first thing. They need a green pen. And I'll set a task off, for example, so all of my lessons start with recap questions. They'll do the recap questions, and then I'll say, right, now you need your green pen. And they'll use their green pen for three reasons. The first is to tick the answers that they get correct. The second is to fill in any answers that they've left blank. And the third is to then add any further notes from anything that they think someone else has said that they find particularly interesting. And what I say to them is that their effort marks, when I come to do their reports, is actually based upon the quality of their green penning and the notes that they make. Now, that actually means straight away, number one, pupils are responding to your feedback. You're giving feedback orally. You're going through questions in class orally, but they are responding to that using their green penning. And what you also see is the progress that they're making. They are improving their knowledge. They're refining an answer. They're improving an answer. They're correcting an answer. And so you tick a lot of boxes if you want to tick boxes for people who look at your books in terms of the progress that pupils are making. So green penning for me is probably my number one strategy. Do it every lesson and check the quality of that. It also reduces my marking because those questions have been marked. Now, obviously, I check them. It's important to check them, but I don't have to be as thorough in my marking of those things.
And do you find that you've had to, I mean, this is something that's kind of developed over time and you have to kind of train children to use it? Because, I mean, I teach year five, and I, hearing what you're saying, I reckon there are cases where I could implement exactly what you are saying, but I think it would take a few rounds to make it work and to ensure that they were doing it in the right way. So how has that worked in terms of getting them on board with this whole idea?
Definitely. I mean, I think the first couple of weeks is training them in all sorts of manners, you know, marking their books, you know, within the first week is training them in terms of making sure that they underline their dates and titles and training them in terms of the presentation of their work and using all the space. I think absolutely you have to train them with green penning. And that's also about giving it the amount of time that it deserves. You know, the guest earlier was talking about obviously giving dirt time appropriately and making sure there is enough time for that. And I think what we have to do at the start of the year is really take into account that things are going to take a lot longer, but actually you're going to save yourself a lot of time in the long run if you train the pupils properly. And they do it really well. And if you equate it to something like an effort grade, they take it very, very seriously.
And in terms of, I mean, we've got some inspections coming up. We've got my school's just been taken over by a bigger organisation, and we've got them coming through the school. And of course, we're all thinking, oh gosh, you know, they're going to look at our books and think, oh blimey, you know, they're all dancing to a slightly different tune at the moment, because as I mentioned previously, it's not quite aligned at the moment. I mean, have you been through a sort of an inspection situation where inspectors have looked at it and have sort of gone, okay, I can see the progress here, I can see what you're trying to do, I can see how and why this works?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, what I would say is I would question alignment as a whole school. I would suggest that, I mean, I'm secondary, so different subject areas potentially should approach marking and feedback in different ways because the needs will be different. In terms of the green penning, yeah, I mean, in terms of work scrutinies and inspections, that has been held up as exemplary because it does tick all those boxes with regard to providing feedback, giving pupils the opportunity to respond and make progress, which is what fundamentally they want.
Oh, absolutely. And I know I asked my other guest about this, but in terms of when you were online and when you were online teaching, how did your marking and feedback differ to being in school? Because, I mean, as I mentioned, I sort of struggled with it, and I struggled with how much I should do, because there was no sort of real guidelines on this, because we had no idea at the time when we were in lockdown, and we were sort of left to our own devices. And I tried different things. I tried leaving voice notes. I tried leaving nice comments. I tried emojis. I mean, you name it. And it just, I didn't really kind of quite nail it, I don't think. But did you feel that, you know, your feedback changed when you were online? And has any of that kind of come back into the way you use marking and feedback in school now?
I think we all struggled with it. I think it was really, really difficult. And I think I'm not sure I've met anyone that didn't struggle with it. It is really, really hard because you don't have that immediacy necessarily. You don't have that personal contact. You don't have that immediate sort of clarification or anything like that. I mean, I did the same as you. I used Google Classroom. I did feedback every lesson to keep the motivation up. It was a lot more work. And I don't think that's necessary when we're teaching, you know, face to face. I did also use voice notes, but I found that actually a lot of the time it was inaccurate. And there were times when actually rude words were put in because they hadn't picked up on my voice or my intonation. And I had to really go back and read everything really, really carefully. So there isn't a lot, to be fair, that I've carried forward from the COVID period in terms of marking and feedback. I think the only thing would be at the higher level with our IB students or the, you know, A-level students back in the UK, is that we have electronic portfolios, which I do mark electronically using mark sheets and mark grids. It's a really great way to sort of collate their work and look at their work holistically. It's a requirement for the course that they do as well. But aside from that, I think marking remotely was a very, very taxing thing for all of us.
It seemed to take, and I don't know if this, if you felt this, but it seemed to take longer. And I don't know if it's because of the screen time or because of no one, again, no one was there to kind of tell us where. I mean, we had a starting point, but I never really knew where the end of the day was. So it just kind of seemed to drag on and on. And I think I drove myself a little bit balmy with it.
Yeah, I think the thing with the online marking is probably we felt a greater need to mark everything, which you wouldn't do in normal circumstances, because you want them to see that you've seen what they've done, and you need to show them that you've seen what they've done in order for them to keep doing what they're supposed to be doing. It isn't necessary in the face-to-face, and I think so many people found it much more onerous and much more hard work. So it is a delight to be back in the classroom, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly found it easier. And I think as well, because we were trying to keep that motivation up, I mean, in primary, obviously, as well as secondary. So again, I think feedback played such a crucial role in that, saying, yes, I've seen what you've done. Yes, you know, keep going, stick with me. You know, we're not going to be doing this forever. So maybe that's kind of why we did it, just to really try and say, okay, you know, few more weeks and we will be back in school. Let's just keep going. I don't know if you found that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think remote learning was more about keeping the motivation going than that consistent
moving people forward. It was much harder to move pupils forward. It was about keeping pupils online and engaged with what we were trying to do.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you've touched on this already, and I think Adam, when I interviewed him, found this a bit of a loaded question in a way, but I want to ask it to you as well. How do you see marking and feedback evolving going forward? I mean, whether it's, you know, more generally or in terms of your school, where do you see it heading? Because obviously there are reviews and reports and things that come out. And I mean, I'm, as always, when I do the show, surrounded by bits of paper that I've highlighted that are different reviews and thoughts and feelings and different schools of thought. And I wonder kind of where you see that future, what you see the next trend, if you like, being. Not that we should talk in terms of trends, but it does feel a little bit like that when we talk about any kind of policies linked to education.
So there's a number of things here that I would say. I think the first thing I would say again is reiterating that we really need to have SRT teams and middle leader teams that are supportive of their staff and make sure that the marking and feedback policies that they have are not onerous. I think change for change's sake, trying to improve something, let's just strip it back, keep it really, really simple and focus on how we support pupils to get better at what they do. Let's have one system that is clear, that is simple, that is straightforward, that is easy to do, and is really, really focused. So I think what we need to do, what I'm really focused on actually, is that the pupils have to work harder than us. And I think there's a lot to be said, isn't there? Now, I don't believe in peer assessment, but I do believe in peer feedback. And I think that I'm really interested actually at the moment in success criteria and semi-linked into that learning intentions or big questions or whatever we want to call them. And I know Kate Jones's new book, 5 Formative Assessment Strategies, the first chapter is dedicated to that. Shirley Clark has a new book out on learning intentions and success criteria. And I just think what we really should be focusing on is training our pupils so that they are so clear and so aware of how they are being assessed that they can really begin to interrogate their own work, critique each other's work, reflect on their work in a much more metacognitive way. That's not to say that obviously the teacher is redundant. We play a really integral role. But I think that they have to have a greater ownership and focus on their understanding of how they're being assessed, so that becomes a much tighter dialogue.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, interesting you talking about sort of LIs, LOs, WALTs. I mean, I've heard them under many, many different names and success criteria, because I've gone from in the UK to from that being sort of what I build my lessons around. And in the school I'm in now, it's just not a thing. And I feel a little bit at sea sometimes because it's, you know, I might have a title or I might have something, but that's not part of the planning process. And I remember being in one of my schools in the UK where it was very much about, you know, what skill do you want them to do? Don't just give a task-based LI or LO. You don't, you know, because, you know, they can complete a task depending, you know, whatever subject it is. You can give a child a worksheet or any odd thing and that's fine. But what is it you want them to actually learn? And I, in a way, found that quite helpful because that then gave me a starting block rather than just being kind of, okay, well, I've got to do a lesson on this, you know, where the hell do I start?
Yeah, I think there has been a real sort of emphasis on big questions. And I think the nice thing about big questions is that you are seeking an answer and pupils are seeking to answer that question. And that in itself, you know, you either know it or you don't. So feedback there is pretty straightforward. I think that's the first level. I think the second level is the success criteria, making success criteria really, really accessible to pupils so that they really understand what it is that you are actually asking of them so that they can begin to identify it in their own work. I think that is where live marking actually is a really, really good strategy, because you can bring someone's work up under the visualizer. You can mark it in front of them against the success criteria, and honestly, the ripple effect in the classroom where pupils are then looking at their work going, oh, I haven't done that. Oh, I've done that. Tick. Brilliant. It's second to none. It's absolutely fantastic. So I think there's a lot more work actually to do with success criteria. decontextualizing success criteria, actually, so transference can happen, but also really educating our pupils to work with success criteria to help themselves.
Oh, most definitely. And I'm just looking again at Joe Kirby's research that I've got in front of me. And he talks about, you know, ways to feed back rather than mark. And again, a lot of the things you've spoken about are here. And there are things that I've highlighted as well. But certainly using checklist or success criteria, you know, critiquing as a class and working sort of more collaboratively and more collectively, and the energy actually happening in real time, and the marking and the feedback happening in real time, rather than, I almost feel that after a lesson it's already gone a bit stale, so by the time you're coming back to it, it's not, you're not quite approaching it even as a teacher with the same energy that was there in the moment in class.
Yeah, and there's kind of two things there that I'd like to pick up on. I think, you know, when we're thinking about marking, I know that I enjoy planning way more than I do marking. So I think as teachers, we also need to think about when we're marking. Are we marking when our energy is at its highest level? So I mark in the morning, I plan in the evening if I have to plan in the evening, because I know that I'm much more productive. And also, are we like rewarding ourselves? So I know lots of teachers do that, right, I'll mark five and then have a chocolate bar on the side. You know, just to keep our motivation up. I think the other thing that we really need to think about is how we assess. Now, in English, obviously, there are going to be points where pupils need to produce a written, a written story or a newspaper article or something like that. But there are also opportunities for, as your guest previously was saying, like an oral assessment. You know, oracy is something that I know has come to the forefront a bit more with Voice 21 and School 21. And, you know, it's our school focus this year. But we can also assess people's understanding orally and, again, feedback and assess in the moment without necessarily having to do onerous, you know, written comments or marking codes or stickers or whatever. So I think we also need to think about how we can be really clever about ascertaining whether our pupils have the knowledge or whether they've developed a particular skill as well.
And again, I mean, I know I keep coming back to Kirby's research, but there's just a lovely quote here that I've got, that feedback should maximise the responsibility pupils take for self-checking, correcting, editing and redrafting their work. And it should maximise preemptive teaching. So I think, again, that's things that you've alluded to as well, that energy should be coming, well, largely from them. And I think that, you know, again, early careers teachers, I know, and I'm still relatively early on in my career, there are some lessons I come out of where I'm completely exhausted and I think, well, hang on a minute, this is not right. Like, why am I coming out of this thinking, oh gosh, that all came from me, and I felt like I was on transmit for the entire lesson, rather than allowing it to kind of be more of a sort of, well, dialogue and a dialogic approach. So I think that there are definitely pitfalls that I do fall into, and that I think other teachers fall into from time to time.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we've been trained, haven't we, to produce as much evidence as we can. And I don't think it's necessary. I think that everyone will agree, when you get a set of books in, you can tell you can identify the patterns where there are misconceptions or errors have been made. And you don't need to write that down, because you know it, you've got it in your head, and you can feed it back next lesson at the start, and everyone can look at their work themselves to double check whether they've made that error or made that misconception and it needs to be addressed. I do think we do a lot, and I think teaching is really, really difficult, and teachers don't have a lot of time, especially in the UK. I mean, we are more fortunate internationally. Mm-hmm. We do have more PPA. I think we have to be really, really clever about putting more emphasis on what pupils do.
Oh, definitely. And I just, I forgot what I was going to say. It's completely exited my brain. But no, I totally hear everything that you are saying. And in terms of having evidence to present and all the rest of it, I think these are all things that we sort of have drilled into us from early on. And it takes practice. And I think I said to my deputy head recently, that this is my first year where I felt, okay, I don't need to be busting a gut to make sure that there's beautifully, beautifully written marking in the book, and that I'm spending hours and hours and hours on this. I actually am starting to understand, just from being in the classroom, what works and what doesn't, how I can utilize or make use of the children in the classroom, because ultimately, you know, between us and them, we are the most valuable resources in the classroom, and everything else is just extras, really. And it's I'm almost kind of disappointed that it's taken that long for me to think, okay, how can I do this differently? How can I ensure that they're getting everything that they need in real time, and that I'm giving them the best experience possible? But I suppose it does come with doing the job. And I think that that's why I maybe when I trained, I sort of when I first went into class, I thought, oh, goodness me, this is horrendous. And I'm going to have to do this, this and this. And it's only since doing the job and actually doing it year on year that experience and that knowledge and that understanding comes.
Definitely. I mean, you know, we've all been in insets where exemplary marking has been held up or feedback's been held up, and there are pages and pages of written comments. And, you know, look how detailed this feedback is. And we're trained to think that that is what we need to do. And it isn't what we need to do, because actually the impact that that has is probably lesser than something that is really sharp, short, incremental in terms of gain for the people themselves. So I think we need to be really, really supportive of ourselves and our work-life balance, and know that we can offer great feedback, but it doesn't have to be onerous. And actually what we should be working towards is making our success criteria really, really accessible, so that pupils can start to work with it themselves and gain greater independence as they go through the school.
And I truly believe that an approach like that can certainly work from lower down in primary as well. And I have seen it work. And maybe when it comes to reviewing our marking policy, that might be something that comes back and that allows us to build the lessons where they can be more collaborative and they can lend themselves more readily to that feedback in the moment. Because I'm kind of, the more I've spoken to you this evening, the more I've actually sort of been sitting here thinking, okay, maybe that's what's not quite right, maybe this is what I need to bring up. So it's been enlightening for me, Freya, so thank you very much.
I would say if you're going to try one thing, try green penning, because it will reduce your workload, but it will also really help the pupils with their progress and their learning. So green penning, massive fan. Not my technique, Michaela all the way, but it transformed my workload.
Oh, well, fantastic. Well, I think all that remains for me to say, Freya, is thank you so much for popping on this evening. I really do appreciate it, and I hope we can have you back soon to talk about other things, because this has been fabulous for me. I mean, I think if nothing else on Teachers Talk Radio, I have learned so much in the last sort of 5-6 weeks that I've been doing this. So it's I mean, I think I heard Tom Rogers describe it as, you know, just hour upon hour of free CPD, which is brilliant.
Absolutely. I mean, dialogue with other teachers is the best form of CPD ever, isn't it? It's been amazing to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and have a lovely rest of the evening, and I'm sure we will chat on Twitter very soon.
Definitely. Take care. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye. So that was Freya tuning in from Italy. We had the lovely bells in the background originally. That was great, although I did slightly panic that I had a phone alarm going off. I think I always worry that I've sort of left noises on, and I'm always that person in a meeting whose phone goes off incredibly loudly. So mercifully, that was not me. But my main takeaway from listening to Freya speak was that green penning technique. And I think regardless of whether you are primary or secondary, I think that is invaluable to have children kind of going along with you, and you can see straight away what they've understood, what they've green penned in, so what they either haven't had a chance to get to or what they haven't quite understood. And I can see that working certainly in upper primary. Maybe, I don't know, I mean there are year 3 and 4 classes, I think you could probably gradually introduce it in. I don't see why that couldn't work. So I've definitely got plenty to think about. And I'm already thinking about, you know, where can I implement green pen in maths, English, you know, across the board. So I think that's been a fantastically enlightening, and long may my CPD sessions on Teachers Talk Radio continue, and yours too. I mean, what a great way to spend an evening. I mean, I know I often talk about other people's shows as well, but I think we are truly in a in a privileged place to be able to listen to so many different talented and incredible people in education talk about such a variety of subjects. So that side of it is just brilliant. But I will stop waxing lyrical about that and tell you what else we have to look forward to in the future. So unfortunately, as far as I'm aware, Libby is not following on from me today, so I don't get to big her up for a show this evening, which is a shame because I quite like doing that and I've definitely been enjoying her stuff as well recently. She, I believe, is back next week. Again, I will double check that with the powers that be and they will let me know when she is making her return. Next week, I'm going to be talking about something that's has been on my mind really ever since I moved to international school. And those of you out there might be in a similar position to me. I want to talk to those of you who've made the transition from state schools to maybe private schools within the UK or abroad and how you feel about that. Because for me, when I originally teacher trained, I decided that, you know, and as I'm sure a lot of us do, that teacher training was to help, was to make sure that I could put myself in the worst possible environment because that was where I was going to make a difference. And for a while, I did that. And it was, you know, it was hard and I worked in some fantastic schools, but very, very tough places. And, you know, over time, it kind of wore me down a bit. And eventually I decided I just needed a bit of a break. And I made the move to international school, which is, of course, I mean, in terms of, and Freya alluded to it this evening, in terms of workload, in terms of work-life balance, it is a very different speed. And it's great and I love it, but I also still have that sense of, did I check out at the right time of working in the UK state system? Should I have done that? Should I not be back in the UK, you know, in a tough environment, really putting my skills to use? So I wonder if any of you out there maybe feel the same way about that, or maybe that you've had an experience where you've gone from state school to private school and then you've gone back the other way. I'm always interested to hear of people who have done that as well. So let me know. I think that'd be a very interesting subject to talk about, and maybe you can make me feel less guilty. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if guilt's the right word, but we can discuss that more next week. But other than that, I just want to say a final thank you to my two guests this evening, Adam Woodward and Freya. They are both on Twitter. I will link them into my show notes this evening. I will also definitely remember to link to all the pieces of research and different things that we've talked about. There's a couple of things that Freya mentioned that I want to grab off her as well. So do look out for those on Twitter. You can find me at Lucy New. And does anyone else want to tell me what they are having for dinner before we end this evening? Any takers? No? Okay. Well, maybe you'll tell me on Twitter afterwards, but I'm still determined to keep this feature going. It's not going anywhere. So do please, please get involved. You know I love to know. And also, if nothing else, it's further free inspiration for me. But I just want to say thank you again for tuning in this evening. It's always a pleasure to have you. Time and time again, some of you are incredibly loyal and do tune in each week, which I do appreciate. But have a lovely evening. Stay well, stay safe, and I will speak to you all next week.